Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Lewis Edwards, whose long-awaited new novel is Ramadan Ramsey. Edwards is one of New Orleans' most distinguished novelists. He's the recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship and a Whiting Award. The Lake Charles native is the author of 10 Seconds, N, A Romantic Mystery, and Oscar Wilde Discovers America. Now he's back with his first novel in almost 20 years, Ramadan Ramsey, and it is a beauty. In case you're wondering why it took so long, it's because Lewis has a pretty demanding day job as Chief Creative Officer and Chief Marketing Officer at Festival Productions, which of course produces the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. Lewis Edwards, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan. It's great to be here.
It's been
a long time.
Yeah, I know. I'm so happy to see you.
And you too.
If ever a book was worth the wait, this is the one.
Wow.
So
thank you.
Now, so many strands weave their way through this book, and you wrote this wonderful blog about the process and the things that came together to give you this story. And the opening scene was something you saw as far back as 1999, and that's how it works, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those books that that had a long gestation period. Longer than usual, because we're talking about the late 90s, mm-hmm. and I don't start writing it until 2012. So I did, in probably 1999, witness this little flirtation that lit the spark. And it happens at a neighborhood filling station convenience store. There's a young black woman, local, and one of the gentlemen who runs the store, Middle Eastern. And it's just a simple little flirtation, eyes, and a couple of words, and they're near my pump. Be careful what you do near anybody. It could be a writer there lurking. And so that stayed with me, and immediately there was a child in my mind. Yes. The child who would subsequently become Ramadan Ramsey. So that was part one. So a lot happens over the years. It just stays with me. And then I'm traveling. I like to travel quite a bit. And I was in Istanbul, and it was Ramadan. It just happened to be the season of Ramadan, not planned. And I woke up early one morning to the sounds that you hear during Ramadan, which awake the citizens to have the morning meal before fasting, mm-hmm. and I hear these sounds in my hotel room, and I just wake up with this kid just leaping into his grandmother's arms, and that was in 2012, and that's subsequently becomes the time frame of the book, mm-hmm. the late 90s through 2012. Kind of honored, I think, just the gestation period of the book, and now we have it. There are a few years in between that. As you know, it takes a while to get a book to print. And this one's now here.
And you asked someone this really important question about Huck Finn on the Bosphorus.
Yeah. We had a great escort while we were there. And we were on the Bosphorus on a boat ride. And it was magical because Istanbul is magical. And I just suddenly, there was Twain in my head, and there's this kid in my head, and the sense of adventure. And I asked the escort, who's very erudite, as it turns out, about Huck Finn, and she knew him. She just lit up. I mean, it was almost as if she felt something, too. She said, "I love Huck Finn." And I said, "Is there a Huck Finn on the Bosphorus? Anything like that?" She looked and thought, And she said, no, I don't think there's anything.
Wow.
The next morning was when I woke up with Ramadan in my head.
And you stepped in there to fill the void.
Yeah, well, you know.
took
the leap.
So talk about this young hero. Talk about what it was like to write Ramadan Ramsey.
Wow.
I love him.
Oh, thank you. He's a special kid. I don't think he's unique in his ethnicity. I think there are things that mm-hmm. happen in the world. I think there's love across borders, and in a place like New Orleans, we know there's love across all kinds of borders. And but in this particular place, in this particular time, he becomes special in his own way. So it's a blending of cultures. It's a story about global family. I was feeling all of this as I was imagining him. And it was a lot of fun. He's become separated from his father. He doesn't even know about his father. And when he hears about him for the first time, he immediately becomes desirous of knowing who that is, what that is. And of course, it has metaphorical, inklings about, we all want to know who the creator is, right?
Right.
So we end up toying with some of that. But for this single kid, he just wants his dad. He just wants his dad. And it's primordial, that kind of feeling. And it drove this book from start to finish.
Well, and it drives it with great force, which is lovely. I mean, for the reader, because you're just turning pages and turning pages. Now, one of the things I love about this book is that sense of urgency. And there's tragedy, to be sure, as there is in life. There's loss of loved ones, Hurricane Katrina, including a view from inside the Superdome, a second line shooting. But there's constantly forward movement, and Ramadan keeps rushing headlong through life and through the world. And it's almost as if the world conspires to help him.
This is true. In a way, it's true of life. I mean, I felt that with this book because Ramadan wanted to do what he wanted to do. He wants to find that force that created him. And I couldn't stop him.
You were along for the ride.
I was along for the ride, so I had to figure out each step of the way, logistically, right? There's a lot of logistics that go into getting this little kid from New Orleans all the way to Aleppo.
Right.
Okay, right?
On his own steam.
On his own steam, and there's a little luck along the way, but there's a lot of ingenuity. You know, he's very special, and he's talented, but he's a regular kid, from Treme, right? He's a sixth ward kid, who figures all this out for himself. He's got a great grandmother, a very powerful woman, complicated, who helps him all along the way. He's got this family that's there that spurs him on in unsuspected ways. And he makes the leap from that front porch. And he's on his way, and I'm following him.
And so are we. So read a little bit for us from a passage called Interludes, because it kind of gives a taste of the energy of this text.
So I'd love to. I mentioned earlier that I'm a traveler, and so I think that's where this came from.
I'm glad you're back.
Thank you. Felt like I've been around the world. Taking Flight, this sort of interlude is called. Here we go. Have you ever been to Rome? Have you ever set out for Paris? Ever jetted off to any foreign land to fulfill a dream or escape a nightmare? Or like Ramadan, thrillingly, to do both at once? If so, then you have an idea what taking flight incites in him. How a continental shift can promote a constitutional one. You know the change that being set in motion can, well, set in motion. You know how motion can precipitate emotion. Moving is moving. You may not have devised, who has, a method for calculating the degree to which kinetics stimulates the intellect. Physics modifies psychology. But you know all too well that the distance between where you disembark and where you land is only crudely measurable in miles or kilometers, and more accurately mapped in feelings and revelations. And if you haven't been anywhere, well, what the hell are you waiting for? A hurricane? A war? A literal shot in the arm? A cure for the plague, that is fear? An invitation. Birth is your invite. Breath, your passport. Bravery, your visa. In a way, the notion of birth, earthly or otherwise, is precisely the point. Home is a womb. It nurtures. But imagine never pushing forth into the world, your growth inhibited by habitat, the comfy confines of your mother's accommodating girth. Wouldn't persistent satiation feed a need? Wouldn't nourishment, without growth, nurture a longing, create, in effect, an appetite for hunger? Thus, your stasis, replete with life's necessary nutrients, would equal starvation. Feast would become famine, with the usual dire consequences. To remain fetal would be fatal. Oh, to be Ramadan, who parallel to this pause is plunging head first, with a tender spot on his forehead from that bump against the airplane window to prove it, into another world. Him today, you tomorrow. Why not? What's a bruise on the noggin, or any other part of the body, when the trade-off is a balm for the soul? You pack for the trip, of course, clothes, toiletries, a snack or two, but really, your only carry-on is you. Though you may be toting a suitcase or haversack, you leave behind your real baggage, your life, like old, dead skin. Travel is an exfoliation, what emerges as you move forward, buffed to the surface. By merely going there is a shiny new you. You become the you you are in Barcelona, your Amsterdam you, the you you're meant to be in Berlin, the you of Sao Paulo. Who are you in Tokyo? What's your heart rate in Brussels? Will anyone recognize you in Dakar? Will you even recognize yourself? There's only one way to find out. In short, you're reborn. There, it's been said. This is about rebirth. What is rebirth anyway, but seeing visions, hearing strange voices, breathing different air, walking a new path, arriving at a new place in life? Well, to arrive, one must first depart.
Oh, Lewis, I want to become the Barcelona me.
Me too.
I mean,
that's where I was going before lockdown. I was going to Spain, yes.
Well, if ever there were an invocation to travel, that is it.
Yes.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Lewis Edwards, whose new novel is Ramadan Ramsey. Underneath all this, this is the novel. It's a novel with such a broad, embracing spiritual context. I mean, it has everything, you know, Alicia, Ramadan's mother's wearing a crucifix. When she meets Mustafa, he is observing Ramadan. And then there's a bar mitzvah, a Quran, the call to prayer, a visit to the Hagia Sophia, an ecstatic dance. Mm. My favorite part. I did an ecstatic dance when I finished this book. But so what was it like for you to explore all that spirituality and describe it? Because you do it in such loving, beautiful, detailed language.
Well, thank you. I grew up a Catholic boy.
I wonder why.
Right. Southwest Louisiana, yep. Catholic boy. And as such fellows are wont to do, lapsed.
Oh, well.
And then maybe 5 years ago, I started going back to Mass. It was a church directly across the street from my house. It seemed ridiculous not to at least pop in every now and then. And I go regularly now.
Yeah. So
there's something in me that wants to experience spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
I like the theatricality of Catholicism. That's really what I like most about it, because it's I feel like I'm going to the theater.
It's very
every
beautiful.
Sunday. It's really, yeah, but in a real ritualistic and, you know, it's like a script that gets performed every week. Anyway, so it's in me to explore in that way, and there's a way of being devout that I think doesn't necessarily mean being religious.
Right.
Right? To be a devout liver, you know, to be a devout humorist, right? To be a devout writer. I do take writing, when I do it, in a very serious way, spiritually, but I do bring all these other things that I just mentioned into it, whether it's just living, the joy of living, humor, but with a seriousness that wants to sanctify all of it.
Well, many writers compare writing to prayer. For me, reading is prayer, obviously.
Yes, clearly. You know? Yeah. Yep. Yes. And it comes across just in this conversation that that's the case. Yes, I would say I feel like, and I wrote a lot of this book, you know, getting up very early because, as you mentioned, I do have this other thing that I do, 4:30, you know, in the morning before dawn. And it's a quiet and very spiritual time. Mm-hmm. And it was the right thing to do for this book.
Well, tell me what you knew about Ramadan and those traditions before you started the book and what you researched.
Not a lot.
Really?
No.
Ramadan's one of my favorite. The whole idea
Once you start, you know, studying it and experiencing it, I could do a day at a time, right?
Yeah.
But before the hypoglycemia kicks in. But
we're older now.
Yeah, right. But it's like other spiritual holidays, you know, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, seasons, whether it's Hanukkah, right?
Yeah.
Or the Christmas season, or Easter for some people. These rituals are vital. And I translated what I knew about my religion and the seasons of it to Ramadan. And I feel like I just trusted the humanity of experiencing a religion in general, and felt like, well, that's what religion has to be for everyone. And that's what the special seasons have to be. Because you see the joy of people celebrating Eid, you know, it's, oh, I know that joy, right?
Yeah.
Right? You know it when you see it.
I don't think I ever really understood what Ramadan was. And then I got to interview Queen Noor of Jordan after when her autobiography was published. And she went into great detail describing the things she instituted for Ramadan, the iftar, and what joy that brought. And I think for the first time, I really understood it.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing I love about your description is that when you're in Istanbul and you're in the taxi with Mr. Emir, and he's getting caught in traffic, and it's like, ah, Ramadan, ah, you know what I mean? It's
right.
About the joy and the irritation, and here is this young boy in the back seat going, what?
Right, a young boy named Ramadan.
Right.
Saying, wait, what's going on here?
The confusion and the burden and everything, you know?
Yes. I love that seems so funny.
It is.
You know, because Emir, I mean, he's going through something, you know. Ramadan physically can be, you know, a strain.
He's hungry. He's in traffic.
It's hot. It's really hot. So I let him experience it. And it turned into just this, I just think, tremendous comic introduction to Istanbul for Ramadan.
Made for the movies.
Oh, boy.
I must say, made for the movies. Yeah. Now, I want you to talk to me about how it felt to write this book, because it feels different from your other books. I mean, all books are different from one another, but this feels bigger and freer. And so much of it is about embracing contradictions in the world, the joy, the tragedy, loving a city like New Orleans, of course, and even the moments of intense love that can be found during the dangers of a wartime and all that the world has to offer.
Yeah. So, well, I'm older, wiser.
Yeah, right.
Right.
You had to be ready.
So there's that. I had to be ready. You know, there's a lot of talk about when somebody graduates to writing their best books. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they say it's the third novel or the fourth novel or what. But in that zone, it's rare that it's the first novel. So in my mind, I've kind of always thought, in the sense of the bigger, that I was expanding my range from the first novel, 10 Seconds, which is a very quiet, personal, little experimental thing, just a little jewel box of a man's existential crisis. That's all it is. Really tiny. 10 seconds, right?
Exactly.
That's the time frame, right? And then I get to this mystery, which is a New Orleans book, right?
Still one of my favorites. You know, I love that book.
Yeah. So that's a mystery, right? But it's New Orleans, away from my hometown, which I was fictionalizing in 10 seconds, so this new space. And then Oscar Wilde discovers America is all over America. It's his entire tour of the states in 1882. And now, where are we? We're going around the world. So just the physical space, I think, is quite consistent with just having, I think, a larger vision and reaching more and having, I hope, achieved a certain level of wisdom at this point that I'm really happy to share as entertainment, because I've always, from the very beginning, thought I want to do important work, but I do want it to be accessible. Mm-hmm. And so that's not easy to pull off, but I it's important to me that that it is accessible.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Lewis Edwards, whose new novel is Ramadan Ramsey. So talk about this as the step on your journey. I mean, like, what did contemplating all this spirituality and world energy and sacredness? I mean, you tackle a lot of things in this book that are wide and deep, and you do it lightly and beautifully. Mm. So how does that move you along as a person as well as a writer?
Wow, that's a great question.
Not that you needed to go anywhere, but
no,
you know what I mean.
We all need to, you know, advance. I've probably learned something from all of my books and from writing them. Because as we said, if it is a prayer, right, mm-hmm. Then if nothing else, there's this the sense of security and wonder, right, that comes of it. So maybe that's the greatest gift that I got from writing this book, just wonder. The word imagination appears in the book a few times, and this kid imagines his way all the way across the world and, you know, gifted me with you know, telling that story. So it's the wonder, I think, that I'll take from this one.
That's enough. That really is enough. I take the Feel the Beautiful dance.
Oh!
Which I loved so much, the Feel the Beautiful.
Can't wait for people to experience it.
I know, me too.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Lewis Edwards, whose brilliant, joyful new novel, his fourth, is called Ramadan Ramsey. You can meet him Tuesday, August 10th at 6 when he appears in conversation with Garden District Bookshop co-owner Christopher Tidmore at Garden District Bookshop. This is a ticketed event. Go to gardendistrictbookshop.com. Lewis, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Here in New Orleans, congrats to Blue Cypress Books, which is relocating from 8126 Oak Street to a new two-story location right across the street at 8123 Oak. There will be a grand opening Saturday, August 7th, with a book signing at 2, with Jim Gabor, whose most recent book is Meow, Monsieur, The French Felines of New Orleans. Members of the Monday Night Writing Group will be reading from their work at the Latter Library Poetry Buffet, Saturday, August 7th at 2 via Zoom. Lewis Edwards discusses Ramadan Ramsey with Garden District Bookshop co-owner Christopher Tidmore, Tuesday, August 10th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. This is a ticketed event. Go to gardendistrictbookshop.com. And coming up, the Jefferson Parish Library's Comic-Con, a comic book mini-convention that focuses on superheroes and comic book culture. It takes place from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, August 14th at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Costumes and cosplay are encouraged. The event will feature the following components: how to draw workshops with Mike Artell and Samantha Helenas, a superhero training academy for kids crafts, a photo booth, a Marvel movie scavenger hunt, face painters, and trivia. It's all free and registration is not required. Check out jplibrary.net for more info. In Baton Rouge, the Louisiana Center for the Book in the State Library of Louisiana announced last week that author and Louisiana native Fatima Sheikh has been selected as the recipient of the 22nd Annual Louisiana Writer Award. This prestigious award recognizes outstanding contributions to Louisiana's literary and intellectual life, exemplified by a contemporary writer's body of work. Sheikh's books include her most recent nonfiction narrative, Economy Hall, The Hidden History of a Free Black Brotherhood, published by the Historic New Orleans Collection. It's a meticulously researched work on a largely forgotten aspect of Louisiana history. She's also the author of two short story collections, The Mayor of New Orleans, Just Talkin' Jazz, and What Went Missing and What Got Found. She's also the author of two picture books, The Jazz of Our Street and On Mardi Gras Day, and the young adult novel, Malit, all set in Louisiana. The Louisiana Center for the Book will present the Louisiana Writer Award to Sheikh at the opening ceremony of the Louisiana Book Festival Saturday, October 30th in Baton Rouge. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellas Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.